flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest, over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Jaden Daniels, 350 total yards, 2 touchdowns, 45 points for the Commanders. They take down the 15-win Detroit Lions on Saturday night. And I don't get how any of that was possible. I thought you were supposed to sit rookie quarterbacks.
No, yeah. You want to sit them. You want to let them watch and learn.
They got to marinate.
You can ruin them. Yeah.
You don't want to break them.
That's how you develop a quarterback these days.
Especially thin guys like Jaden. You don't want a thin quarterback out there on a bad team.
Can't play him. No, his team must have been really good the year before. What pick did they have?
Oh, I think the Commanders are on a good, NFC title game run, aren't they?
That's a really good outfit, the Washington Commanders. Although they have a new owner. They got a new GM, so they really are actually now legitimately good. But no, this, in all seriousness, this is one of those, one of many examples where the NFL prides itself on worst to first and first to worst and parity. And oh, you suck one year? Well, you can be great the next year. And everything they did in the offseason wasn't like a slam dunk obvious choice either. No. We rolled their eyes when they hired Dan Quinn. They drafted Jaden Daniels, who I think a lot of people liked. And we were kind of doing the scouting report because you didn't know who the Patriots were going to get. But you're like, all right, still a rookie quarterback. Austin Eckler seemed like on his last legs. Zach Ertz legit seemed like he was like a dead player. So they added all these guys. Was it Bobby Wagner? Like, how old are those three guys?
Bobby Wagner has got to be in his mid-30s,
right? They're like 100
right?
years old combined, those three guys. And
I bet Eckler's younger than you think. But Wagner
but running back. You got to grade like a dog. Like, he's in running back years.
I Googled it. I got Franz Wagner.
I bet Eckler's 30.
I got Franz Wagner. Hang on.
Franz Wagner, good player.
Wagner's 34. Eckler's, in his 30s, I'm sure.
Oh, he's 29.
You're right.
Yeah, but he plays like he's 39. but that's a 40. That's a 40-year-old at every other
Correct.
Position.
Yeah, the 40-year-old running back, and then Zach Ertz. I thought Zach Ertz retired like 3 times. Mm. How old is he? He's 34.
Yeah,
but it wasn't anything like, oh, they're going to be amazing, and you're like, oh, they're in the same division as the Eagles, and even at the time we were saying, oh, the Cowboys. Like, what chance do the Commanders have? And they just week one played Jaden Daniels. He looked awesome. Week one, he had a little dip in the middle. But then just kept rolling. And the guy had an unbelievable season. He'd be offensive rookie of the year. And now he's in the NFC Championship game with one of the big upsets in recent playoff memory.
So, to me, I think it's unfair to say you could be where Washington is, like, in a conference championship game. Because the AFC is so much better than the NFC.
That's true. But they did beat the best team, or at least we thought, in the NFC.
That's true. But I'm not going to say if the Patriots had the same offseason as Washington, and they didn't half-assed their offseason, and they hired the right coach, and they hired real coordinators, and they filled out the roster around Drake May, and they started Drake May week one. If they did all those things, I legitimately think the Patriots could have been a playoff team this year. I felt that way all offseason, And I was wildly disappointed in how they approached free agency. Their draft was terrible. I didn't like a lot of the hires they made last year. And so I think all that's on display. I'm not saying they'd be in the AFC title game, because now you're knocking off Buffalo or Baltimore or Kansas City or someone like that. Yeah. I'm not going to say that. But they easily could have been a playoff team if they made some correct decisions last year. Washington knocked most of them out of the park. And so, you know, I see texts here, 617-779-7937. Jones, didn't you say you wanted Jaden Daniels last year, or didn't want Jaden Daniels because he was crying on his mom? No, that was Caleb Williams.
That was not Jaden Daniels.
Which, by the way, I feel vindicated about. I liked Jaden Daniels a lot last year.
Yeah, I liked him.
I liked him early on in the year when a lot of people felt like it was a two-quarterback class. I liked him. And so I just like Drake May better, which brings up the next text. Don't ever say Drake May is better than Jaden Daniels. That one I've been guilty of.
Well, it's not right now.
I would have drafted Drake May before Jaden Daniels. Yeah. I was saying even last week, I'm like, I think I'd still take him. That might need to be on probation now that he's a win away from the Super Bowl.
No, I think Jaden Daniels right now is way above everybody else in his class. He's still playing, for God's sakes. All these other guys got eliminated months ago. He's still playing. So he is far and away the best one. But just like I don't think you can completely write off Caleb Williams. You can't say Caleb Williams is a bust. You can't also put Jaden Daniels in the Hall of Fame. Like, he's awesome right now. You know, Bo Nix made the playoffs. How's he going to be in year two? As much as I like him, he could go the other way in year two.
Sure.
Like, guys can change from year to year. C.J. Stroud, a year ago at this time, we looked at him like, oh, he's one of the five best quarterbacks in the league. Then this year, like, maybe 10.
Yeah.
Right? Like, he's kind of sliding
his
down that
individual
scale a
play dropped off. They won another playoff game.
They did.
Absolutely worse this year. Baker Mayfield dropped off early in his career. You pointed this
but
out
Drake
a lot.
But Drake May, if you surround him with
Mac got worse year one to year two.
Much worse. Yeah. Right.
Also, Jaden Daniels is an old rookie.
He is.
So is Bo Nix.
He's a very old rookie.
So is Malik Cunningham.
Okay. There's something with those two, though.
But I also not
the to more re- experience going to the playoffs.
But also not to go through the whole argument that we had in April when they drafted these guys. Everyone's like, well, Drake May is so young. Drake May is so inexperienced. Jaden Daniels played all these games. Like, Drake May played two full seasons of college.
Mm-hmm.
That used to be plenty.
Yeah.
Guys used to go to college, sit for a couple years, then play for 2 years, then get drafted, and then play. But whatever. Like, I don't think he's like this, guy with zero experience and all of that. But Drake May had one of the worst head coaches in the NFL, an offensive coordinator who's really a quarterback's coach, all the excuses that we've given him. Already they've made moves to improve that. So, I don't know, this might sound like a homer, but don't you think Drake May's second season, there's a chance it could kind of mirror Jaden Daniels? Not the conference championship game, to your point, but just sort of mirror Jaden Daniels' rookie year?
Yes, and there shouldn't be excuses. I said this about Vrabel.
Yeah.
Now you're bringing in a guy who's been to an AFC title game. You're going to have a real coaching staff. I think I'm encouraged that, you know, maybe Josh McDaniels isn't the slam dunk that I thought he was as an offensive coordinator, but you're going to have real experienced coaches. You're going to have a real coaching staff. I think you're really going to spend money. Hopefully you draft better than a year ago. You have an ass schedule, which you've highlighted.
Oh, yeah.
Terrible schedule.
Oh, you could win 9 games rolling
so
out of bed.
So you should be a playoff team next year. There's no excuse not to be a playoff team. And that's a year after Jaden Daniels is in the NFC title game and maybe the Super Bowl for all we know. 617-779-7937. With Washington, by the way, in the NFC title game, the longest drought in the NFC without a title game appearance. Do you know who it is?
Cowboys?
Dallas Cowboys.
95, right?
Uh-huh.
That's pretty amazing.
That is
awesome. That is juicy stuff. And they have to watch two division teams play in the Super Bowl, or two in the conference championship.
NFC title game, yeah.
One in the Super Bowl. The other thing, and we have a whole week to talk about this, but it just jumped out to me as, you know, the games wrapped up over the weekend, is either Nick Sirianni or Dan Quinn is going to be coaching in their second Super Bowl.
That's crazy, because when we listed all the coaches,
we don't really like either guy.
No.
And one of them, they're both going to.
The only two that we both took Vrabel ahead of, you took more,
I had a few guys,
more
yeah.
coaches.
Mm-hmm.
Dan Campbell. I took more coaches. You had fewer. I had Campbell, and not a good one.
Nope.
But when it comes to those two guys, they're going to be in a second Super Bowl. And we're both like, these guys stink.
Yeah, no, we don't want him. So, you sure? Like, Sirianni and Quinn are actually pretty good.
617-779-7937. I want to get into more of the coaching. Ben Johnson, his day, has the shine come off? Is that fair to criticize Ben Johnson and question him big picture? We get into Brady as well. I like Brady on Saturday night, which I did not expect to come in and say.
That game overall was insane.
Like, it was a crazy game.
Not 2021 Bills Chiefs, but kind of close.
Yeah.
Like, it was wildly entertaining.
It was.
Yeah.
Let's go to the phones. Tim's in Springfield. Hello, Tim.
Hello, fellas.
Hello. Yeah.
One thing that I want to see is like a revision to that forward pass, you know, quarterback, when he's dumping the ball to avoid a sack. The Rams game and Vikings game last week, I think Stafford had his head down. He couldn't see anybody. He flipped it, backhanded.
Do you know, Tim, to jump in.
Should have been intentional and grounded.
Tim, hang on, to jump in. You know the play he's talking about where Stafford probably should have grounded it. He was in the grasp of the defensive player.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're going back to that, Tim? You want to see that changed?
Okay.
Well, yeah, I want to make sure, like, you know, now the quarterbacks, they have so much going their way. Well, just like you were saying with Mahomes, he can run down the sideline. He doesn't go down. All of a sudden, he just takes a pass. He takes a couple extra yards. He's not worried about getting hit.
Yeah, I'm okay with protecting the quarterbacks. And, like, that Stafford play should have been grounding. I'm with you on that. And maybe the league will make strides to correct that. They probably should. I'm okay with protecting the quarterback. Mahomes does, and this is not a Patriots fan crying, just Mahomes does take that a step far, where that flop was so pathetic.
That sucks.
On Saturday.
Yeah, you can't defend that at all.
I wonder if they're like through the looking glass on this, where now it's going to turn back on them, or it's just bad karma or something like that, and it's going to catch up with all the flopping. Because it's one thing for the refs to give you a call on a bang-bang play. The Patriots got every call for two decades. The Chiefs are getting every call. It's a whole different thing when you're begging for it and trying to trick the referees into doing it. Mm-hmm. And I do wonder if they're tempting fate on that. That's all I said on it earlier.
Yeah. No, I know. The grounding one bothers me a little bit less, but I understand how impossible you're making it for the defense.
How often do you see that? You don't see that ever. You see Mahomes, you know, quarterbacks embellishing on the sideline with a hit all the time.
Oh, I think every time Mahomes runs, you're wondering, like, is it just going to be the run, or are they going to tack on 15?
And again,
like, just no matter when he gets hit.
Maybe it looks so weird because he runs so strangely.
That's the Keyspiracy, which I think once people really pay attention to it, they're going to be on board with.
I'm gonna stop watching it.
He's not as smooth a runner as Josh Allen or Jalen Hurts, so when he gets hit, you're like, oh my God, I feel bad.
Chris is in Worcester. Hello, Chris.
Hey, guys. Thank you for taking the call. I was shopping if I missed your first call. But listen, I don't want to be quarterback. But, yes, it was horrible officiating. But can I go back in time a little bit?
Please.
Because I want to ask about Corey Dillon. Was he a
beast? That's way back in time.
Or what? Yeah, that is way back. But remember we were talking about running backs and stuff like that? You guys were talking about running backs. Did he do anything in the playoffs? Like, was he a beat? I can't remember his really.
Yeah, Corey Dillon in 04. I mean, I don't know his postseason numbers offhand, but I remember him being impactful. Yeah,
that
for
was
sure.
The man. Well, yeah, so anyway, we're talking about Saquon Barkley with the Eagles. I think this is where he's talking about. And
yeah, we were talking about running backs making a comeback and the impact on winning. I mean,
but there
Corey
hasn't
Dillon
been,
in 04.
Oh, he was great, but there hasn't been a Super Bowl MVP running back since 1997, which was Terrell Davis. Corey Dillon in 04.
He must have been good in the Colts game, right?
144 yards rushing in the Colts game.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The Steelers, I think they aired it out against the Steelers, if I remember.
Still had 73 and a touchdown.
Okay.
And
then the Super Bowl against Philly.
75 and a touchdown.
Okay, so
that guy's a man.
Okay, but that's only one awesome game in there.
That's not 200 yards or 240 from scrimmage and, like, three touchdowns.
Right,
it's not that, but it's, like, very effective. Yeah, he was really, really good, but that's also 20 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, that's a long time since the running back has been the featured guy in the offense.
Sony Michel ran him to a Super Bowl.
Sony Michel is very good. He had James Devlin in front of him.
That's true.
Smashing guys in the face.
You got the hammer to the nail there.
Yeah.
We'll get back into your feedback. Should the shine come off Ben Johnson today? Chris Scheim.
Yep.
Is going to be in today at 2 on WEI Afternoons. I heard Greg's show talking about this a little bit. He was arguably you liked Ben Johnson?
I loved him.
I'd say Scheim was arguably the biggest proponent.
Yep.
Is it fair to have questions about Ben Johnson after that game? And the play I would highlight is the Jameson Williams throw, the interception.
So, yeah, that was the worst one because Jared Goff played poorly.
Really bad.
And you can look at that one two ways. Like, Jared Goff had a great regular season in part because of Ben Johnson, I think. You got to give Goff himself some credit. But that's who Goff is. Like, I've never been sold on Goff. When we were ranking the quarterbacks, I remember last week I was like, I guess I have him like fourth or fifth in the playoffs just because how good he's been.
Mm-hmm.
But I've never trusted him. I remember the whole week lead up when they were playing the Patriots in the Super Bowl being like, this guy stinks. Like, he just,
And he did in that game. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now he's gotten better. He's been a much better NFL quarterback than I thought, but that was still in him. And so some of those turnovers that he had, I can't put on Ben Johnson. He had some crazy plays that Brady said he's never seen before.
So
and that was my reaction too. Watch
this. This is what I was going to say. It's like, so because they ran one wide receiver pass that didn't work, you have to look at all the other plays and ignore them. The great play calls he made.
Dude, that one play where they pitched it to like the running back who then pitched it
was Montgomery. Montgomery pitched it to Amon-Ra St. Brown.
Same.
Yeah.
It was sick.
Brady legitimately was like, I've never seen that.
Yeah. No, they had 521 yards of offense and 31 points, and it's like, this guy doesn't know what he's doing.
So I don't think he had the greatest day. I do think that's fair to say.
Yeah.
And if you want to say he's fallen a little too in love with the trick plays, I want to say Ryan Clark has been talking about this on First Take and Get Up. Maybe I'm miscrediting, but I believe that's who's been saying it. It's like, it used to be kind of a gimmicky thing you'd see here and there to now their offense kind of needs it. And they needed it,
but they kind of work a lot. Like, he's got a pretty high hit rate on him.
They do, but if you're constantly relying on gimmick plays, that does say something about the overall offense, right? Your straight up plays don't work, so you got to go with the gimmick plays. I think that's all a fair criticism.
I think as long as you're moving the ball, like, and it's not like it seems like he's going to newer plays. I think Jameson Williams is what really hurt him was that play, and I guess you can't call that play if you don't trust that player. Because I'm sure he coached it. Hey, run over here, see a look. If you don't have it, eat it. Like, mm-hmm. I'm sure that, like, with all these trick plays and all these, especially when it's a non-quarterback throwing it, I don't think the coaching point was get over there and huck it.
No.
No matter what the defense is showing you, huck it. But Jameson Williams, probably still off the high of his crazy touchdown run that he had earlier in the game, was probably feeling good about it. He's like, I'll make this play too. And so that does go down to Ben Johnson. But overall, I mean, their offense, they lost a shootout.
Yeah.
I don't look at the offensive side of Detroit and be like, what the hell happened to you guys?
Ben Johnson's still greater than Mike Vrabel in my estimation.
Yeah.
But I think it's fair to criticize Ben Johnson coming out of that game. I want to bring up the Brady aspect. Rick in Wilbraham has a take on Tom Brady. Go ahead, Rick.
Yeah, I thought it was funny. I know someone mentioned you like Tom Brady. I thought he did a great job. The line, I don't know if anybody picked up on it, about as towards the end of the game, he goes, I'm not sure Dan Quinn likes owners coming down.
It was
that
a good
was
line.
Great.
To the field before the end of the game.
Brady,
that was really funny.
Brady had a really good night. Brady's had a terrible year. I still don't think he's good at the job, but if Brady's going to do more of what he did on Saturday night, and maybe it's because he's been interviewing Ben Johnson and around the Lions, and he's done a million Lions games, he's talked to Aaron Glenn and Ben, maybe he's just super plugged in with them. You know, he called out the 12 men on the field like way in advance, long before anybody noticed it. Certainly anybody on the field, the referees, the teams included. I thought that was a good line about Dan Quinn and the owner on the field. So I thought Brady had a good night, and I'll give him his due. I've given him a lot of criticism. I thought he was good on Saturday.
Yeah, I agree. I think if his first game was his worst game, his most recent was his best. That's a good thing. I know that's what a lot of people kind of predicted with Brady. And we were like, I don't know. Like, it just seems like this isn't going to be his thing. I still have a lot of questions about the future of him doing that job, especially if he's like
You don't think he's going to do it?
No, I don't.
Don Yee came out and said he, quote unquote, plans on it.
All right. Great. But I think especially if he has like a good Super Bowl and at least ends on like a high note, I think he'd be more driven if everyone was like, oh, he sucks at it. He'd be like, all right, screw you. He'd come back and do it. Like, he'd be motivated. But if he has a huge say in what's going on with the Raiders, I don't know. It seems kind of odd to me if he ends up doing that.
No. He should. The NFL should force his hand on picking one or the other. Yeah. I'm with you.
Let's give him credit where credit's due. He was solid in the game there. And I'll tell you, because I had my doubts, especially, 3 months ago, knowing that Fox is going to do the Super Bowl, you're like, this could really be ugly for Brady. But I don't think it will be. I think he'll be fine.
I think maybe he's learned something over the course
of
the year.
Does he wear all 7 rings? I feel like he kind of should.
He should.
To the broadcast. Be like,
will he? I bet not.
And just hold him in front of your... Don't mention him. Just hold him in front of your face when they go to the two-shot. Like, yeah, here we are, New Orleans, getting ready for the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I've won two here. Did he win two in New Orleans?
Yeah, maybe.
Did he play two in New Orleans? I forget. They've been to two in New Orleans.
I forget. Was it two in Houston?
Maybe. I'm thinking of 96, actually. Yeah. I'd have to go back and really
Yeah, no, 96, I think they lost.
Are you... do you think the Lions have to move on from Goff?
Well, every time we ask this question about a team, or who do you move on from, or are you going to commit to quarterback X? It's like, well, I don't really want to, but who are we going to get? Where do you go from there?
I mean, the answer is Rodgers, Cousins. I mean, names like that.
Probably keep Goff then, if those are the alternatives. I'd probably keep Goff. I think they're in for a much more rude awakening, though.
Without the coordinators.
And you could say, well, Aaron Glenn had a terrible game. The Commanders scored nonstop. They did have, not to do the excuse train, a lot of injuries. They had a lot of injuries going into the game. They dropped more guys in the game. Like, that was a lot of second, third stringers for the Lions defense. It was not a good game by any stretch. But you lose those two guys, and then you get Dan Campbell, who can't even get you know, 11 guys to be on the field.
Not great.
That's tough for Dan Campbell.
So I wonder if they move on from Goff. I'm not telling you I have a great solution, but I do wonder if they move on from him. Yeah. You can jump in on all this. 617-779-7937. Meanwhile, we're going to get to the Celtics coming up, not to steal any Billy's thunder here in trending. But Michael Silverman in the Globe came out with, the Celtics are expected to have four bidders in this this round of bids.
The Jones and Keefe show, one of them.
We're absolutely one.
Yep.
They're expecting around a $6 billion valuation, which I don't buy for a second, but that's what Silverman wrote the Celtics expect. Right. They don't own their own building. Their payroll is astronomical. So four bidders. Pagliuca is one, which we knew. He adds that the Fenway Sports Group, which owns the Red Sox, the Penguins, and Liverpool, is also expected to make a bid. No one would feel good about that, correct? I don't think I need to extrapolate on that much more. John Henry owns the Celtics.
Not want that at
not
all.
Not great, Bob.
Nope. That would be the pits.
Who's that worse for, the Celtics or the Red Sox?
The Celtics.
Yeah.
Because the Red Sox, we've kind of unfortunately gotten used to where they're at, and we're like, all right, if they're going to win, they're going to have to win it this way. The Celtics, we just got this huge payroll, and with the team, although the team is struggling right now, which we'll talk about, but they've at least, they're going big. They just won a title. They're trying to keep that title window going. So if they come in here and trade away like half the roster to save money, that would be a problem.
That would not be good. John Henry could, you know, he could trade Mookie Betts and Jason Tatum. That'd be a good legacy to have here in this city. we'll get to your phone call. 617-779-7937. All your divisional round thoughts remain on the table. We'll get to the Celtics, Bruins later on in the hour. Joe Mazzulla, some perplexing comments. Jaylen Brown apparently pissed at everything. He's been blowing off the media, which I didn't realize until this morning. Let's get into that with all your phone calls right after Trending with Bill.
Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, football fans, for those of you who can't get enough Baldy's breakdowns, be sure to subscribe to Brian Baldinger's The Best Football Show. New episodes drop Monday through Friday, where Baldy breaks down the best games of the week. Be sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
So when Joe Mazzulla says he's excited about it, this is the good stuff.
This is great.
Does it feel that way?
It does not.
Celtics fans, do you agree with that?
No, it does not. And I'll tell you, proving once again that winning is everything in every sport, Joe Mazzulla is starting to lose me a little bit.
So I was just going to ask you this because we're on the Joe Mazzulla bandwagon.
We weren't, and then we were.
Yeah.
And now I'm like starting to like find where I can get off.
They've lost 3 out of 5, 4 out of 7. They're 8-8 over their last 16, I believe.
Yeah, they're a 500 team for the last close to 20 games. That's a decent sample for where they're at. And
it's a quarter of the season.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like 500, like that's the 8 seed. That's the bottom of the, that's like a play-in type of team. And the losses are one bad team after the next. Like, you lose to Toronto and then Atlanta in a 3-game stretch. And
Atlanta again.
They got your number. That was like, what was it, last year, the year before Orlando, when Orlando was bad, kept beating them?
Yep.
But too many times we've come on the air and we're like, well, that was their worst game. And they got that one. Like, that was their worst game. Like, they had another, that was their worst game over the weekend. But then Mazzulla, it's funny, when he first took over, and the team hadn't broke through, didn't win the whole thing. They were still successful, but they didn't break through. We were kind of like, oh, my God, he's fighting with Gary Washburn about threes every press conference, it seemed like. And I'm like, I don't know about this guy.
Well, these were all Gary Washburn questions.
Of course.
Tatum's walk-off on Friday night where he's like, I guess I'm a big deal, was a Washburn question. Yep. This is a Washburn question. We're going to play another one coming up where Mazzulla has me on the verge of tapping out.
He's pretty critical of the team, but I think rightfully so in these cases. Like, he's fair. I would view him as very fair.
Do you care about this? And we'll get back to Mazzulla in a moment. You guys can jump in on the Celtics and what's wrong with the Celtics, because
something is.
There's no Keith Scoop on the Celtics yet.
No, not yet. I'll dig in.
Something's off there, and you're starting to wonder if Jaylen's in the middle of it. I was unaware of this. Greg brought this up to me today in the crossover. I didn't even know about this. But Himmelsbach reported over the weekend that Jaylen Brown has not taken part in a post-game media session after any of the last four games. I didn't realize that.
Okay.
And he specifically declined requests the last two. Apparently, after the Orlando game, he was out of there quick, after a win.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a rocky first half of the season for the All-Star, who was atop the basketball world last spring when he was named the MVP of the conference finals and NBA finals, blah, blah, blah.
Okay.
I didn't know about that. So I'm not saying Jaylen's the problem, but you wonder if I'd start there. and we brought this up last week, is Tatum making an MVP push and that annoys Jaylen Brown? Or, you know, is Jaylen Brown wanting to legitimize what he did a year ago with the NBA Finals and Eastern Conference Finals MVP, and he can't? Peyton Pritchard's gunning for sixth man. Porzingis trying to wedge his way back into the starting lineup when they won without him. Horford's back on the bench. Derek White's making an all-star push. Like, I don't know whose individual agenda is out in front of the team, but it sounds like something that they're struggling with.
And is Joe Mazzulla the right guy to fix it? That's where coaching does come into play in the NBA. It can be overrated, and I don't even know if it's overrated as much as it's just not as important as a head coach in the NFL. And so a lot of it is going to come down to sort of managing these massive personalities. Like, you could talk about the players in the NBA, tough to kind of get all working in the right direction. And so Mazzulla initially took over in a weird spot. There were some tough moments there. Remember Marcus Smart calling him out? Was like a weird, like, kind of struggle for power. They then supported him with like all these assistant coaches to try to beef him up. Then you win the title and you're like, all right, he's good, all set. But it's like, man, that all happened really quick. And now that you are facing some adversity, is he the right guy to talk to these super-duper stars and get them back going in the right direction?
Okay, so right, when they're winning, we love Joe. Now they're losing again, we're kind of teetering.
Tell me
how you feel about this. This is an exchange after the game on Saturday. They split over the weekend. They beat Orlando, blow them out. They lose a tight one with Atlanta in overtime. Tatum misses a shot at the end of regulation and at the end of overtime that could have sent it to double OT. Let's hear Mazzulla with Washburn after the game.
You guys got a long flight coming up. I mean, now you're going back out west. What's that flight?
Your body language is, I mean, that's, you look demoralized.
No, I'm not demoralized.
Oh, okay.
I'm just,
I was going to say.
I mean, I can't be perky and you guys just really blew a game like this.
Yeah, we sure did. Yeah, we blew that one. That was bad.
Okay,
I
mean, stop real quick. What do we think of that?
He's getting pissy again.
Well, is that pissy or is that kidding around? I honestly can't tell. He did it with a smile on his face, to his credit. Mm-hmm. But, and it doesn't sound pissy to me. But just the fact that he's
trying to change it,
mixing it up and like, well, you look demoralized there. And then Gary's like, well, you guys suck. And he's like, yeah, that wasn't good by us.
Yeah, no, it was real bad. Real bad.
That's interesting is all I'll say about that.
It was interesting.
Give me more.
Yeah, we blew that one. That was bad.
I mean, but how do you kind of get the guy's spirits up? You guys play in a day and a half.
I mean, you have, again, like this, you get the spirits up by having honest communication, but at the same time, like, you know, we got to play another game. We don't have time to, I mean, I guess we have time. We have a long flight, but we just don't have the time to worry about it. Like, you know, we'll learn from it. There's an accountability thing. There's communication in there. But like I said, like, I don't, like, I guess my question when I'm always in situations like this is like, what do you expect? Like, do you expect that when you do something as a team, do you just expect it to just go well for you all the time? Like, I always ask myself that in situations like this. Is like, I use some explicitives before that, but I'm like, what do you expect? Like, did you expect we were just going to have another 65-win season and we were just never going to, like, make mistakes or, like...
Stop.
Yes.
Me too.
First part, yes.
Yeah, I mean,
never
you're going to make some mistakes.
No, I didn't think you were going to play 82 perfect games.
Did I think you were going to win 65 games?
I did.
Yeah, me too.
I for sure did.
You shouldn't win 65 games this
Great
year.
Great teams do. Stan Van Gundy said it's the best team ever assembled.
Good point.
Before the year began, he was like, Keith, this is the best roster ever.
Keith, 2 weeks into the year, and the East has improved, but 2 weeks into the year, there were, like, two teams in the Eastern Conference over 500.
It's Cleveland and the Celtics.
The Eastern Conference isn't even that good.
Yeah, I for sure thought they were going to win 65 games.
Me too. I thought you were going to pick up right. You didn't lose anybody.
But then, see, he overdoes it. It's just, oh, you thought we were going to be perfect all year? It's like,
no.
Or not make any mistakes. No, there's always going to be mistakes. But you're so... far, or you're so much more talented than all these other teams that you can make multiple mistakes within a game and still find a way to win those games. You're not going to win them all. That's where there's like a buffer there. 65, and what would that even be? How many losses would that be? 17 losses? I think?
No.
Too much.
No, you're right.
Okay,
right.
17 losses.
Yeah.
So like, you can still lose a bunch of games. That's okay.
Yeah, you're going to stub your toe. You're going to lose games. We all wrap our head around it. You're going to go 500? 8-8 over 16 games, like, over a month plus, you're going
to
do that?
But you lost to the Raptors.
Yep.
You lost to the Hawks again. You know, the Kings, that you lose to them. You've lost a lot of these signature games as well, we highlighted. You know, Oklahoma City and Cleveland, the Christmas game, like Golden State.
So, I thought you didn't lose. Did you lose a coach or a significant player from last year? A player of importance from a year ago? You didn't.
No.
So, yeah, I thought you were going to do that.
They won 64 last year. I thought, yeah, why not again this year?
And I think they are better. I think they're better. They're healthier. Pritchard's been more impactful. Maybe that's part of the problem.
Yep.
But they should be better. Keep going, Joe.
If you're
going
to bring back, if you have the same team and a group of guys that are doing something together that we're going to show our ass from time to time, like what, and not you personally, but like what do we expect? Like, what do you expect? And that's why it's a part of the journey there. And so we just don't have time to worry about that. We need to fix it. We have to fix the details, and we will, and we'll do that. But you know, what keeps me one in kind of what I'm explaining to you is I trust the character and the mindset and the preparation of our team. And over the course of a long stretch, whether that's till All-Star break, till season, till playoffs, till next year, I don't know. But there's just the utmost trust in how they carry themselves. So, you know, there's not a group of people that I wouldn't rather go through something difficult together with. So, again, sign me up. Okay. Doesn't mean I'm happy. Like, but, you know, this is the thought process about how we're going to go about it, you know?
So this goes back into what you were saying, Keith. Is he a little too trusting that just because they're talented and he likes the personalities and he likes the guys in the room, is he a little too trusting they're just going to figure it out?
I know.
And a little too hands-off. At least he acknowledges we need to fix it. Right. He says they're going to fix it.
He loves the journey.
He loves the journey, but is he a little too hands-off and just saying, well, they'll just figure it out?
Well, maybe, and I guess the bigger question is not whether you or I are still, you know, in on Joe Mazzulla and like in enjoying these press conferences and the whole Mazzulla experience. Are the players? We talked about it with the Bruins, which we'll get to. You know, they tune out coaches left and right. Teams around in every sport seem to tune out coaches and managers left and right. They end up being the fall guy. I'm not saying by any means Joe Mazzulla is on the hot seat, but does Tatum and Brown and those guys, do they look at him and they're like, yeah, we are going to dig out of this? Or like, is his message no longer getting through? I never thought I'd ask that 1 year after winning the title.
No, me neither. I do like this. Good text. 617-779-7937. Let me get this straight. You guys are walking back the fact you like Joe Mazzulla. You're acting more and more like Mayo by the day. But fair point. We're walking things back.
Yeah, but not the next day.
The
big difference with Mayo was it was one day, and then if we came on tomorrow and we're like, just kidding, I was with him the whole time.
It's like 6 weeks later, and they've been playing 500 for a while.
And we weren't always on Team Mazzulla. This has been a little bit of a ride. We weren't, and then we were, and then we've tried to stay on there, and now you're like, I'm not off yet, but I'm thinking about it.
Yeah, I'm looking at it.
I'm considering.
I'm looking at an exit strategy.
Yeah, where do we go from here?
You can jump in, 617-779-7937. We'll get back into the divisional round. Good weekend in the NFL. Your Celtics phone calls on tap as well. Plus, Brad Marchand benched.
Huh?
In an overtime loss against the Ottawa Senators. You don't say. Mm. Let's get into it next. So if you missed any of that was Joe Sacco after the Bruins 6-5 overtime, well, shootout loss, I should say.
Yeah.
To the Senators on Saturday. Bruins are back at it this afternoon against the Sharks, I believe.
What a feat to lose that game.
Oh, it was special.
I mean, first of all, they didn't play very well in the first period, but they were still tied. They scored two goals late. They were down 2-0. You're like, oh my God. Maybe the Rich Keefe boost is worn off. They won back-to-back games after all that kerfluffle. And against good teams, and you're like, all right, maybe they've kind of snapped out of it a little bit. And then they're down 2-0, and you're like, oh, maybe not. And then they tie it and whatever. And as the game goes on, they're up 5-3 in the third period. And you're like, all right, they're going to win this game. Right? They're going to win this game. They're going to get two points. And it's
I don't know if you ever heard. A two-goal lead is the hardest to protect.
You don't want it. No, you want to get the hell away from it.
You'd rather give up the goal and only be up one than be up two.
Be up one. Yeah. Try to get up three if you can, but if not, be up one.
Yeah, you don't want to be up two.
Two goals.
The worst place to be.
Forget about it.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it was just after that, what a costly night. Ottawa is one of those teams that you got to kind of scoreboard watch with them. Cam Neely mentioned it last week about buyers, sellers. Like, we'll see.
They may have to retool.
They might have to retool.
Is what he said.
And with a performance like that, I mean, you could start to look in one direction.
Well, let me say on the Bruins media's behalf, and Nick pointed this out to me.
Yeah.
Just a great, wonderful job by the Bruins media. I mean, those guys are going to dig in.
Oh, my God.
They're going to ferret out a story like you read about. I mean, those guys, no stone unturned.
One expose after the next.
When it comes to the Bruins beat writers. I don't know who asked the question. Was it McBride who asked the initial question? Who was like, why wasn't Marchand out there in overtime?
Yeah.
Was he
what
hurt?
Happened?
No, he wasn't hurt. No. Coach's decision. So at least they got that answer. Credit to them for that.
They did. Nice job.
I think there were another two questions after that in the scrum.
I assume about that.
Nobody asked anything about the coach's decision.
Oh, they were done with that?
I'm sure they'll get around to that today Well, they can't do it at morning skate. No. Today's a matinee, MLK Day matinee. I mean, they're not going to do it at matinee. What time would the morning skate be?
Oh, my God.
7 a.m. or something like that? Yeah. We're not going to bother the coach with that.
No, no. He's so
I'm sure they'll get around to it after the game, or maybe never, based on the way they cover that team. But your captain is benched in overtime. He's always out there in overtime. He's usually out there in a shootout. I wouldn't say that's 100%.
Mm-hmm.
With Montgomery, I would have said it was 100%. I don't know Sacco's pattern as well yet. Cassidy used to shake things up a lot, and he'd throw you weird combos. With Montgomery, it was like 100% he was out there in the shootout. He's always out there in overtime. Your captain was benched, and he wasn't hurt, according to the coach. It was the coach's decision.
Yeah.
The same captain who the best player on the team doesn't want to play on a line with, according to Scoops Keefe. But nothing to see here, Keith. Nothing weird going on
Everything's
with this team.
Everything's fine. They're best buds. Maybe if he puts a few more Instagram pictures out of the team having a good time or games that they had won in the past, maybe that'll help them a little bit. It seemed like that two-game surge was short-lived. That six-game losing streak was maybe more kind of what this team is right now. Do you know that as of today, Jones, January the 20th.
I was just looking this up. You're looking at the standings?
They're not a playoff team.
They are not, correct.
As of right now, they're not a playoff team. I don't know how much you look at goal differential. You can take it or leave it maybe, but at this point, they're 47 games into the season. Everybody has played give or take 47 games. In the Eastern Conference, only one team has a worse goal differential.
So that's interesting. I was going to say this. The eight playoff teams all have positive goal differential.
Yes.
But the Bruins have these. You're right. The Bruins have the second worst in the Eastern Conference, only ahead of John Henry's Pittsburgh Penguins.
That's right. John Henry.
So they have 50 points. They played 47 games. Montreal has 50 points. They played one fewer game. So the Bruins have a game out of hand there.
They are playing the worst team or the second worst team in the NHL today. So this you got to get 2 points today. Like, you have to. Home game against the San Jose Sharks.
And they did at least get a point against Ottawa, but they should have had two.
They did, but it was costly. Like, they should have had two.
And they gave the Senators
two.
They gave the Senators two. They should have had two. So, in some ways, it's almost a three-point swing.
Yeah.
And, you know, you screw all that up on Saturday. So, we'll see if they rebound.
Even the Florida game, they should have blanked. Florida shouldn't have gotten even a point.
Correct.
In that one.
That's another one where you handed it out.
Yeah.
So, it's the reason why it is difficult to make up points late in the year.
Oh, yeah.
Is because the NHL hands out loser points, pity points.
All over the place.
And it's impossible to catch up. And that is going to work against the Bruins going forward. Right now, they're in 10th place in the Eastern Conference. But you look at teams with games out of hand behind them. The Rangers are 2 points back, but they played one fewer game. The Red Wings are 4 points back. They played one fewer game. So those teams are closer than they appear as well. Never mind, it's farther away from the teams that are in front of you. So that's going to be a tough one to pull off. It's why Cam Neely said they're going to look at retooling.
Mm-hmm.
Which was a significant comment last week. And what do you know? The captain right in the middle of it benched in overtime and the shootout. Your thoughts on all of it? 617-779-7937. Let's get back to you. Randy is in Providence. Go ahead, Randy.
Hi. I called in. You guys were talking about the Commanders and Lions game and kind of like things we can draw out of it as Patriots fans. And I think it really stressed the importance of getting that quarterback and getting the head coach right. And the fact that the head coach, he doesn't have to be like a young offensive mind. They brought in a strong presence, a defensive-minded coach, and then a failed head coach who was an offensive specialist to work with a young quarterback, which is something we might be doing with McDaniels. So I think there are a lot of comparisons you can bring. They've overcome. If you look back 5 years in their draft, not a single first-round player is still with the team, let alone any good at football. Most of them are not.
Okay, so look. Is there any takeaway with the Commanders and how they assembled their coaching staff? Right now we have two defensive guys and two offensive guys in the Final Four, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sirianni and Reed on offense.
McDermott and Quinn.
McDermott and Quinn. Duh.
Yep.
Is who he's just calling about. So
no, but it's fair. Like,
you have 2-2.
Dan Quinn, but Cliff Kingsbury, who I've been a huge fan of, and he's right, not a good head coach in college or the pros, but a great offensive coordinator, a great kind of QB whisperer, if you will. He's worked with so many of them, both in college and in the pros. And you got to give him credit. He's got to be a big reason why Jaden Daniels had such a smooth transition into his rookie year. So then I guess that becomes your question. Like, is Quinn Kingsbury similar in your mind to Vrabel McDaniels or Vrabel maybe in somebody else?
Well, it underscores to me, if you're going to go with someone like Dan Quinn or Mike Vrabel, mm-hmm. they are similar. Quinn's been to a Super Bowl. Vrabel's been to an AFC title game. Yeah, you can hate on Dan Quinn all you want for blowing a 28-3 lead. He's gone farther than Vrabel, and he's one win away, to your point, being in his second Super Bowl. So there's something there with Dan Quinn. You have to nail the offensive coordinator hire. And I was somewhat encouraged reading Mike Reese over the weekend. He didn't make it sound like a slam dunk that
he's like the only
McDaniels
one.
Is going to be the guy. Correct.
Most he is people, one of the only either ones. Even if they don't say it's a slam dunk, you know, Adam Schefter was on with the afternoon show last week.
He wouldn't give any other names.
He's the only guy he brought
he's
up.
He's like, yeah, it's not a done deal, but then he wouldn't give any
like
other names.
Anybody else?
So I was discouraged.
That might be Thomas Brown.
Yeah, well, I saw Thomas Brown. Who was the other guy they interviewed?
I read the name too. I forget.
He was in Indianapolis as well, I believe. Hang on, I'll get it for you.
Yeah.
The two candidates they talked to, Thomas Brown from Chicago and Marcus Brady. I'm sorry, who was with the Chargers. He had previously been with the Colts.
Marcus
Those are the
Brady,
two they
right.
interviewed. That satisfied their Rooney Rule requirements. And I'm like, okay, well, here we go. These are their two interviews and they're going to hire McDaniels. Reese brought up a bunch of names, which just encouraged me. Arthur Smith. You know, who worked with Vrabel.
Yep.
Same with Tim Kelly and Tony Dews, which was a new name. He also brought up Ryan Day. I guess he initially tried to hire Ryan Day when he was at Ohio State. Not that Ryan Day would leave Ohio State to come be his offensive coordinator in the NFL, but maybe.
What about
Chip Kelly?
Chip Kelly. Hell yeah, Chip Kelly.
Chip Kelly is an offensive coordinator in the NFL. You're in.
I'm all in on Chip Kelly.
I'm kind of in, too.
Big time in on Chip Kelly.
Chip Kelly or McDaniels? Chip Kelly, 1,000%.
Chip Kelly?
Chip.
Oh, my God.
I like it.
Again, not a guy you want being your head coach necessarily, but as an offensive play caller, yes, please.
He also brought up some names from the Rams, Mike LaFleur and Dave Ragone. So you can jump in on this, 617-779-7937. We'll get back into the divisional round. Your thoughts on the Celtics and Bruins if you want to jump in on the phones as well. But when it comes to that Ravens and Bills game, number one, is it the Bills' year? And number two, did the Ravens choke it away or did the Bills win it? We'll get back into that next.